What defines an allergy? It can be a reaction to something that you eat. It can be manifested by something that you smell. It can happen in almost any environment and can be caused by almost any substance. Are unsuspected allergies ruining your life? This program is hosted by Doris Rapp, MD, who has over 40 years of professional medical experience. You'll learn the signs and symptoms of allergies and environmental illness and how to identify their causes. You may even be able to tell if someone has an allergy when they themselves don't know. Now, here is Dr. Doris Rapp.
Good morning. I'm so glad that you decided to listen to what we have to say today. You're going to have lots of information given to you in the next hour. So please have a pencil and pad handy so you can write down some important information that you're going to be given. Today, we're very fortunate to have Dr. Vicki Bowman as our guest. She has a PhD in homeopathy, and she knows a tremendous amount about natural medicine, but her biggest forte is the guts or the intestines. She definitely feels that if your gut isn't working right, you're going to build up toxins and you're going to have problems. And she tells you how to cleanse and how to detoxify in a magnificent book called You Gotta Have Guts. So let's hear from Dr. Vicki Bowman from Phoenix, Arizona.
Well, thank you, Dr. Rapp. It is wonderful to be with you and all of your listeners today. I think it's exciting that people are becoming interested in taking responsibility for getting healthy. You know, it's one of those things that if we don't take care of our bodies, where are we going to live? And our world is becoming less and less friendly to us, and we've got to be proactive in order to stay healthy. I believe that prevention should be the first cure. When we can avoid things, we don't tend to have as many bad things happen. And I know there's a little quote out there that says, the road to good health is paved with good intestines.
So I haven't heard that one, but that's excellent.
Isn't that delightful? You know, and we do know that the intestines are such an important role in our body. And a lot of people don't realize how precious they are. You know, when we eat our food, we chew it up and it goes into our stomach, and digestion happens in our mouth. That's why mom said chew your food. And then more digestion takes place in your stomach. And then when it goes into...
Do you think we should all chew our food much longer than we're chewing it?
Absolutely. You know, the saliva is actually filled with salivary amylase enzymes, and this begins the digestion of carbohydrates. It also, chewing our food, makes our food smaller so we have more surface area so that when the digestive enzymes get mixed in, we actually digest it correctly. So many people are, you know, they just gulp their food down and then they follow it with water or soda or something outrageous that's very dangerous. And instead, we should drink a glass of water 20 minutes before our meal. This allows us to hydrate our system so our gastric juices, our hydrochloric acid, and our pancreatic enzymes are more available, and we're actually hydrated before we eat instead of trying to dilute our juices after we eat by drinking a liquid.
I'm very glad you mentioned that, because it's a point that keeps coming up, whether you should be drinking the liquids with your meal, before your meal, or after your meal, and you've solved that.
You know, I think something that I notice in the Japanese culture is they do not drink liquids with their meal, but they tend to sit around and relax afterwards and then have a very small cup of tea. And, you know, that's a way to cleanse their palate and, you know, to enjoy more time. But there can be many beneficial teas that actually support digestion as well, like a peppermint tea or a ginger tea. But it doesn't.
How many glasses of liquid should the average person been drinking a day?
Well, I use a mathematical formula. So for those that don't like math, it's really easy. You take your weight in pounds. So let's say a person that weighs 150. And we just divide that by 2, so we get 75. That's the number of ounces that a person should drink on a daily basis. I call it, how big's your radiator? So if we have a person that's, say, 100 pounds, their radiator is only 50 ounces. But if we have one of these big athletes that maybe weighs in at 250 pounds, if they only put in 50 ounces, they'd be burning up their engine. So they should do 125 ounces. Now,
which is how many cups?
How many cups? Well, there's 8 ounces in a cup. So, you know, many people say, well, have 8 glasses of water a day. Well, 8 times 8, 64. And if you double that, that's 128. So for the person that weighs 128 pounds, 8 8-ounce glasses is the right amount. But if you
and
weigh
I really doubt that most people drink that much, don't you?
I absolutely think they don't drink that much. It's very problematic. Now, in Arizona, when it gets hot in the summer, I encourage my clients to drink at least one more glass of water, even if they stay inside, because refrigerated air is dehydrated air. Well, then the air starts sucking moisture out of us if we don't stay hydrated. You can look at a baby, and I know your specialty was pediatrics, and babies are plump and they're fleshy and they're moist. And then we look at people as they age, and if they don't hydrate, you see far many more wrinkles and dryness and brittleness in their bones, in their tissues, in their muscles. And part of it is simply lack of sufficient water.
So I hope that everyone's going to listen to you and get on at least 8 big glasses a day, because that'll get your kidneys functioning better and your skin will be better and you'll have fewer wrinkles, ladies.
There you go.
Okay,
you know,
so go on, Vicki.
And I wouldn't suggest that we guzzle down the water all at one time, because that's hard on our kidneys. I try and drink about 4 ounces of water every hour. I just toss in some, and then the next hour I take another half a glass, and I have a glass of water by my bedside, and if I wake up, then I might drink some water. But when I wake up in the morning, as I sit up on the side of my bed, I drink a glass of water. I want to start my day hydrating and not wait until, if we wait until we're thirsty, our body is absolutely in deprivation mode. So it's
now,
important.
I do something, and I don't know whether you'd approve or not, so I'd like to hear. I put stevia in the water because it makes it taste so much better.
I think stevia is wonderful. I use it as well. Many people will say to me, I just don't like the taste of water. Well, first of all, they should avoid city water. So a good filtered water, there's a lot of different opinions on water, so we won't go there, but a good filtered water at least. And then I love the flavored stevia. I have one that's peppermint, and I put a couple of drops in. My tongue, my taste buds are happy when I drink water. There's lemon drop, there's chocolate, there's even one that is root beer. So for a person that...
Yeah, I have orange and root beer.
Yeah, it's delicious, isn't it?
Yeah, actually, I think if the water tastes good, you're more apt to drink it. And stevia is so good because it's totally natural, and it's one of the few substances that I haven't heard anybody really pick on because it appears to be very safe.
It's because it comes from an herb, and also it doesn't upset the glycemic, the blood sugar level, so it's safe for diabetics. And I think that's important. We're becoming more obese. We're overeating, and we're leaning either towards hypoglycemia or diabetes, so we don't want to toss something else in that's going to maybe tip the balance and cause more problems than we really want to deal with. So I agree with you.
Can you tell the listeners how they might spot if they have hypoglycemia? Because it seems to be so common, and this is an indication that you might be pre-diabetic and you might be running into troubles later on. What's the clue that might tell people that they have that problem?
A clue that I look for is if they eat a meal that has a lot of carbohydrates in it, they're sleepy afterwards because they're not handling their insulin well. And so they get really tired, or they eat a breakfast or eat lunch, either one, and maybe 2 hours later they're falling asleep at work or at their desk, and they'll say, you know, I'm just not sharp this time of the day. I feel a little bit foggy. And my suggestion is to eat a few almonds, because almonds regulate blood sugar faster than anything else. And so to have three or four almonds and eat those and watch about 20 minutes later, how are you feeling? And if you all of a sudden you're, you know, you're back on your game and you're able to do the functions that you normally would do, then your blood sugar was dropping. I would consider seeing a holistic person and talking about what I can do, or simply become more knowledgeable about eating foods that are going to support your blood sugar staying level and not dropping because of simple carbohydrates or sugars.
Hypoglycemia tends to rear its ugly face what time of the day?
Most people. Well, 10 in the morning or 2 or 3 in the afternoon.
Yeah, usually you get that slump in the afternoon and you feel better if you ingest something. Do you think that it, because you haven't eaten all night, that it's a good idea to have something, if the child wakes up and they're irritable and out of sorts, to have them have something right next to the bed that they can eat right away?
You know, I think that's a good idea. I love nut butters. And, you know, most people reach for peanut butter, but I would prefer they go for, say, almond butter or cashew butter. Or there's all sorts of good ones. Or just simply have a few nuts, but you've got to chew them well. Also, you know, maybe having, you know, some eggs. I think eggs are just great brain food. And, mm-hmm. you know, to have something like that, I like to keep hard-boiled eggs available all the time. And if I notice that, gee, I'm, you know, not feeling as good as I want to, I put a little bit of eggs in because it just feeds my brain. And I feel better. So those are kind of things. And with children, we need to watch out for children and help them make good choices. And we can't expect them to go and reach for what is right for them. They're going to reach for what they want. And that's not always the best decision.
If you have hard-boiled eggs in the kitchen in the refrigerator and no cookies, they'll eat the hard-boiled eggs.
Absolutely. You're right. And, you know, it's the other things should be an occasional treat, not an everyday snack. And so when we have the things that, you know, we can find wonderful substitutions. You don't have to eat the standard American diet. There's good things that are available. But we have to effort a little bit more. And, you know, I love to share with people that it's not that difficult to fix a healthy meal. And I'll take my refrigerator tray that has all my veggies in it, and I'll take it out and just take the whole tray out and set it on the counter. And then, I love some of the things, like Mrs. Dash. You know, that's a great product that you can sprinkle on. It has a lot of flavor. And so I'll take and I'll just chop up. I go, what kind of vegetables do I want today? And I have a lot of colorful vegetables. And I put a little water in to steam them. I sprinkle some Mrs. Dash on. And just before they're done, about 5 minutes into the cooking process, then I'll take the steamer away. I'll put a little bit of usually olive oil and stir it and cut the heat off, because I don't want to necessarily raise the heat on the oil, but I want to have that good oil because it's so important for our intestines. And you know, and that's a great way. And all of a sudden you've got flavorful vegetables and they're good for us and they taste good. And that's the thing we need to do. We need to train our taste buds to enjoy flavorful foods.
What do you think about organic butter?
Well, personally,
and should the butter be salted or not salted?
Well, personally, I love butter. Now, there's a reason that I love butter, and that is because the colonic epithelial cells have to have tight junctions. So when we think about our large intestine, the layer of cells between the material that's in there, our fecal material, and the walls of the colon is called the colonic epithelial cells. And they have to have tight junctions. They need to be all locked close together so this waste material doesn't get back into the bloodstream. And in order to reinforce that and to have that strong, we need butyrate. And the number one food with the greatest amount of butyrate is butter. So I think it's a great food. I suggest that people eat 2 pats. You know, if you go to places and they have a little piece of butter on a little cardboard thing, that's a pat of butter, to eat 2 mm-hmm. of those a day. I actually make my own butter with olive oil. I take a quarter of a stick of organic butter. I choose unsalted, and I'll talk about that in a sec, and a quarter of a cup of olive oil, and I let the butter get warm on the counter, and then I stir the two of them together, and I put it in a little dish, and I have soft butter. So it spreads very easily, and that's what I put. So the olive oil is good. The butter's good. I think I've got a good food. I will add my own salt because I want to use either sea salt or Himalayan salt, the pink stuff, because I think they have more flavor, and they have minerals with them. So you're not only getting sodium chloride, but you're getting minerals.
That's a very good tip. Do you ever make ghee, the type of butter that they use in India?
I have, it's a little more work than I usually want to do, but I have, and I think it's very good, and I think it's very good for us. So for those that are a little more disciplined than I am, and it's probably because I'm so active in my work and writing, that I don't do all the things that I know I could do.
I think the taste of ghee is absolutely fantastic.
It's delicious.
But I must say that I don't spend the time to do it very often, which I should.
Right. Well,
okay.
And,
so,
you know,
go on, dear.
I'd like to say that when we work at doing the good things for our body, I aim for 85% because I figure when I take care of my body, it can take care of some things for me. But if I get ill, if something all of a sudden, I'm not feeling well, then I'm 100% on everything I'm, quote, supposed to do. So I'm not going to shame myself and say, well, I should do that, but I'm going to do the very best I can, and then I'm going to trust that my body, which is miraculously made and it's got wonderful mechanisms for taking care of us, if I take care of it, then it's going to help take care of me.
Okay. I don't know how to stop that phone from ringing. I'm sorry.
Okay.
So just go on, Vicki.
Okay, well, you know, let's talk about toxins in our world today, because I think people need to be aware of things that are causing problems. And the more you indulge in these, then the bigger the problem could get. And the number one thing is genetically modified foods. And unfortunately, they're not always being labeled, but we need to be very careful with those. And
I think,
you know,
we have to ask our government why they aren't being labeled, because it means that all of us have to read very carefully to find that little small label that says not genetically engineered.
Right. And I agree with you there, although I think that's the wolf guarding the hen house. So somebody's, you know, sleeping with somebody else. So we have to be diligent. Fortunately, there are programs like this. There are books like things that you've written, things that I write about. There are websites out there that are free. We can go on and click, click, click. They send us information. We have to be proactive, and we have to vote with our money. So I choose to spend my money on things that are not genetically modified, and we can do that. And we share information.
We'll be back in a few minutes. It's time for a break now.
A fresh look at today's health. Voice America Health and Wellness.
If you want fast, easy, inexpensive answers to explain why you or your child might not feel well or be able to act and behave appropriately, Dr. Rapp has created several books and DVDs to help you. These materials show the public and educators who has allergies and explains why. The DVDs show how children or adults can react to dust, molds, pollen, foods, or chemicals. The tapes and books also show how handwriting can change from contact with these same allergenic substances. Individuals can often easily figure out exactly what is interfering with how someone feels, acts, behaves, writes, walks, talks, and learns. For more information or to purchase the books and DVDs, please visit Dr. Rapp's website at drrapp.com. That's drrapp.com.
We hear it and read about it every day in the news.
Stock prices plunging, home prices receding, and unemployment rising to levels not seen since the Great Depression.
How can you preserve and increase your wealth in this kind of economy? Tune in to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with host Jay Taylor. Jay will explain the decline of our monetary system and the economy and will give you winning investment ideas and the tools to protect and increase your wealth. Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor can be heard Tuesdays at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific Time, on the Voice America Business Channel.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
This is Our Unsuspected Allergies Ruining Your Life with host Doris Rapp, MD. Call into the program today at 1-866-472-5792. Again, that's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to drrappmd@aol.com. That's drrappmd@aol.com. Now, back to this week's show.
Hi there, this is Dr. Rapp again with Dr. Bowman. I just want to emphasize that I am extremely fearful about the fact that Monsanto is encouraging genetically engineered foods. I think if they are successful, that we are in grave danger. If you read the books by Jeffrey Smith, A Genetic Roulette and The Seeds of Deception, you will realize how absolutely terrible it is to have genetically engineered foods taking over our planet. We may not make it to the end of the century if this continues between that and the demise of the bees because of the pesticides and everything. I think that we have got to pay much more attention to what we're putting in our bellies, but also in what laws the politicians are passing that are allowed and encouraged because of the lobbyists from the food industry, such as Monsanto. All right, so let's get back to Dr. Bowman and some of the other tips that she's going to give you about how and what we need to do in order to keep our bodies better.
Thank you, Dr. Rapp. And I agree with you on the GMO foods, but let's move on to some other things. There, you know, the plastics, the BPA, these things are leaching into our food. And I had an opportunity to spend a little time with our dear friend, Dr. Jason, and he was telling me that the two of you took an aluminum container, and they say that they spray the aluminum with a plastic sealant so the aluminum doesn't leach into the food stuff. And you sent that bottle to a lab, and you asked the lab to test the contents, and that the contents of that bottle was 4.5 times the maximal allowable level of aluminum. And people are drinking and eating out of these containers all the time. We've got to go back to our food the way it was intended. Pull it out of the ground, go to your farmer's market, buy fresh, take care of it, and enjoy it. So that's something we've got to avoid. We also have to avoid sodium lauryl sulfate. It's what makes things bubbly. It's in our shampoos. It's in our laundry soaps. It's in our hand soap. And what it does is it can strip the intestinal lining out of our intestine and make it less protective. Now, people say, well, I don't drink my shampoo, and I understand that. But oftentimes when we wash our dishes, we may not get all of that off, and then we do consume it. You see, we have three barriers that protect us. One barrier is our skin. So we need to be careful with what we put on our skin, such as shampoos and soaps, but also dry cleaning clothing that hasn't been aired out. The second one is our lungs. So we need to be so aware that fragrances, dryer sheets, maybe it has a pleasant odor to some people, but it can be very toxic. And when we breathe it in, we've now exposed ourselves to more toxins. And then the third barrier that we have is our intestinal tract, and it has a mucus lining. Now, it's not a lining like a snakeskin. It's a secretion. So we know that if we've inhaled something that irritates us, we probably find that our nose is running. And that's because we're secreting mucus to try and slick it away in that secretion. And the entire GI tract does that. So when we are taking care of ourselves, then we're, one, avoid the exposure. Simply, you know, keep your home, get an air purifier so that the air within your home doesn't become a sick building if you've got a good air purifier. Get rid of the perfumes in things that really aren't that attractive and cause problems for so many people. You know, I've dealt with allergies myself, and sometimes I'll go into a building and somebody walks in and I simply need to leave because I'm not going to put myself into an allergic reaction. And I don't understand why people continue to do it, but they do. The good news is I can walk away. And we need to learn to walk away from things that are harmful and not just think, oh, well, somebody says it's okay, because it's not okay. Excuse me. Don't know where that came from. Okay, that's turned that off. I apologize.
There are a couple of points I want to make about what you just said. Number one is if children ingest in one form or another too much aluminum, it's going to infect their intellect. So parents really have to pay attention. Secondly, there's a very good, you can get a very good air purifier that takes out 3,000 chemicals, as well as dust, mold, pollen, and food and chemical odors. And that you can get by calling 1-800-78-78-78-0. Just 3 78s and a zero. And if you mention this program, you can get a discount. And the last thing I want to mention is try to buy cotton clothing as much as you can. Wash it before you wear it. If you're wearing dry, clean clothing all the time, be sure to air it out. Take the bag off and air it out, because the chemicals that they use for dry cleaning do cause cancer. Everybody says, well, why is everybody getting cancer? And I keep saying, how bad does it have to get before somebody says, why do we have so much cancer? If you read my book, Our Toxic World, A Wake-Up Call, under drrapp.com, you'll find out why we have so much cancer. We know why. The problem is we're not avoiding the things that are causing cancer. Now, let's get back to Dr. Bowman.
Oh, thank you. You know, I'm going to put a plug in for your book, 32 Tips That Could Save Your Life. It is the most delightful little handbook. It fits in my purse. And it's got, you know, a lot of people think sometimes that those of us that are in the more natural or holistic field don't have the validation or the studies behind it to say, look, this is really happening, when in fact, at the back of each one of your chapters, there's footnote after footnote after footnote. It is very well documented. So when we look at this, we've got research to support what's happening. And, you know, that's true of my field as well. You know, when a person is ill, you know, and they show up on my doorstep, and part of my job is to help them detoxify. We've got to find ways to mobilize those toxins rapidly. The more ill they are, sometimes the faster we have to go, and that's hard on them, but it could be the difference between whether or not they make it or not. And so what we know is that the first thing one needs to do is deal with their intestines. Just like if something is smelling in the house, take out the trash. Now, well, it's
common
kind of
sense
true.
Quite often.
The difficulty is that, and the other comment I make is, don't clean the kitchen if the garbage disposal doesn't work, because our elimination, our large intestine, is where we hold that toxic waste until we eliminate it. And unfortunately, most people don't know how long the material is in their body. From eating it to eliminating it should be between 17 and 24 hours. That's enough time to get the nutrients out and then process the food stuff into fecal material and eliminate it. And if it's
what
taking longer,
you're
toxic.
What food do you think gives you a clue. In other words, if you ate the food right now, when should you see it coming through your bowel movement?
Well, 17 to 24 hours. So if we eat
Which food is the one that will give you the clue?
Okay. Well, I give them the corn test because corn doesn't digest, and I know it's a GM food, so be careful there. But you can also use
organic popcorn.
Organic popcorn, you got it. And so what you do is you take, now if you have diverticulitis, you don't do this. We do the beet test. but what we do is take like 12 kernels of unpopped organic popcorn and swallow it with lunch. Now, tomorrow morning, when you have your bowel movement, look to see if there's any corn in there. And follow your bowel movements for 2 or 3 days to see what's going on. Is there any corn there? You're not going to see all 12 kernels, but you should see a few of them. Now, if you don't want to do that, then get yourself some beets. And I love baked beets. You scrub the outside, you clip off the tail, you cut it right back to where the greens are, and put a little olive oil on it. Bake it for longer than you would a potato. And then peel the skin off. It's delicious. It's rich in nutrients. It's great for your liver, but it's going to come through your stool looking red. Deep, dark, rich red. Don't think it's blood. It isn't. You ate a beet. But if you do this, you're going to notice it in your stool. And you'll say, okay, this is when I ate it. This is when it came through. I know my transit time. And that's a very important thing for everyone to know. If it's too fast, you're losing your nutrients. If it's too slow, you're probably reabsorbing toxins. You know, many people
don't... the toilet when you move your bowels, and your bowels are moving very infrequently, it's like having a garbage can in your intestines. You're leaking out all the time all this food that is not any good anymore, and you're going to be sick. You're not going to feel well. Your bowels should move every single day. Most people's move after a certain meal during the day. And spend the time. Don't be so busy you won't have time to sit on the toilet. This is taking care of your body. You have to get yourself a magazine if your bowels don't move, or take more veggies. But I think everybody has to take the time to move their bowels every single day.
Thank you for that. You're beating my drum. I agree with you. Many people don't understand that the colon isn't just a trash can, that it has a lot of important functions. And some of my work has been the study and the research into probiotics, our lactobacillus and our bifidus. The difficulty is it doesn't get through our gastric juices, our digestive juices, very well. In fact, it's as low as 2 to 5%. And I've developed a procedure where we put it in rectally as a little suppository. So I'm going to talk about the benefits of that. When we have plenty of wonderful probiotics in our large intestine, our large intestine actually manufactures some nutrients. It manufactures B12. It manufactures vitamin K. And there's actually three kinds of B12 that we need, methylcobalamin being the most important. So these are things our body can make for us if, in fact, we have the right things there. It's not just a trash can. The next thing is leaky gut is considered a small intestine thing, so the villi are damaged and stuff leaks into our bloodstream. But also, with leaky gut, maybe you don't get all of your nutrients, or if your bowels are too rapid, or maybe you have something like irritable bowel syndrome, then the food stuff going from the small intestine to the large intestine actually still has nutrients in it. Well, when we have good probiotics in the environment of our large intestine, it can discern and say, wait a minute, this is nutrition I can use, and it absorbs it and gets it into the bloodstream, so we can become nutrient-rich and we can heal. But at the same time, the bacteria can discern and say, wait a minute, you're a bad guy, you're a toxin, you're a heavy metal, you're a poison, you're maybe an insecticide that we picked up somehow, and it blocks it. It binds to it and holds it like a little policeman until we do empty our bowels. So there's a wisdom to our large intestine, not just a trash can. And then I always
can you
say,
talk for a second about yogurt and which is the right kind to buy and what you have to be careful of to try to reestablish the normal flora in your gut.
Right. Well, first of all, people need to be careful with yogurt if they are lactose intolerant. But if that's not the case, then I think don't get the yogurt.
Well, before you go on, how can you tell if you're lactose intolerant?
Well, I usually say you're going to end up with a snotty nose. Many people have a reaction, and they have congestion. So they could have phlegm in their throat or in their nose. Another way I test for an allergy or not necessarily an allergy or an intolerance is to actually take, you know, feel your pulse. Because if you take your pulse before you consume something, and then you consume it and you wait 5 or 10 minutes and take your pulse again, and you haven't done anything like run a marathon, then what's going to happen is if your pulse is increased a sizable amount, more than, say, 2 or 3 beats, then you're having a reaction to it. So what about you? What would you say is an easy way for our listeners to find an allergy?
Well, taking the pulse is excellent, and there are books in the library called The Pulse Test by Coca, C-O-C-A. And years ago, he said, eat a food to which you're allergic, and many times your pulse will not only go up, but it'll become irregular. And that's a clue that there's a problem. I think if you have a lactose intolerance, when you drink regular milk, you frequently get diarrhea. When you drink milk that's been treated with lactase or the enzyme that you need in order to digest the milk properly, you won't get the diarrhea, and that's an easy way of sort of telling what's going on without doing fancy tests at the doctor's.
Right, that's great. Thank you. I'll agree with the diarrhea for some people, but others, I'm going to say it probably plugs them up. But then they innately have a colon problem, and the drinking the milk isn't necessarily going to put them into diarrhea.
Yeah, I think dairy certainly can cause diarrhea or constipation. One of the things that I think, if you said to me, which food causes more trouble in the American diet than anything else, I'll be interested in your comment after I get through for which food you suspect, but I think it's milk and dairy. And if you want to find out if you have a milk and dairy problem, what's an easy, fast, inexpensive way of doing it? Go totally kosher, no milk, no dairy, no cheese, no butter for a week. And then on an empty stomach, eat all the cheese and drink all the milk that you want and watch and see what happens. Do not be surprised if you become sick within an hour. And if you take a quarter of a teaspoon of baking soda and water, it'll help to relieve the symptoms. Now, what do you suggest, Vicki?
Oh, well, I think I would agree with you. Sometimes when I'm working with people that have structural problems, I'll make some corrections and ask them to do it for a month and then not do it, and they'll end up with a backache. So you're giving them a bellyache, and it's a wonderful way to realize how bad these things are making us feel. People go around and go, I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired, but they don't want to do something to change, when in fact when we systematically start removing things and putting good things in, it's a combination. Don't just take things away. Put good things in that are going to support our body being healthy. What happens is our energy comes up. We're bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, and we have the energy and the vitality to do the things that we love and enjoy. So I would agree with dairy as a major allergy, but I'm going to put sugar on the list. And the reason...
Oh, really? Ahead of wheat.
Well, I guess we could list probably a half a dozen.
The grains, the white things, the milk,
the
white bread, and the, what's the other thing? The milk, the white bread, and the sugar, those are the big problems.
Yes, they are. And, you know, I don't eat very many grains, so I don't think about it until I'm working with someone and, you know, we talk about their diet. There are some good grains out there, but they have to be tested one by one. And ultimately, I think that grain is more of a fill-up food and that, you know, you can fill up a belly on it, but it doesn't have near the nutrients for reasons that, again, let's just go back. They've been genetically modified. They're grown on poor soil. They've been refined too much. The list goes on and on for fresh is best.
I want to tell you how I missed food allergies for years. And it's because I had been taught something that was very incorrect. I was told, if you are suspicious of a food allergy, just stop that food for a month and then add it back. And I found that it didn't give me the answer. The trick is you've got to add the food back within about a week to 12, 14 days. If you add it back at that interval of time, you will have symptoms develop within an hour, and they may last a few hours, or it may last even a few days. But if you add the foods back at the end of a month or 6 weeks, many times you'll be fine for the first week or two, and then the problem comes back again. And so I think the time interval between when the foods are ingested twice is very, very important if you want to figure out if you've got a food sensitivity.
I'd like to ask this question of you. Occasionally a person will say to me, I'd like to try and see if this bothers me. And I suggest that they do two doses one day apart, because the first time they take something, it might not bother them. But then being introduced to it again, say one day later, that's going to trigger an inflammatory response or something like that. Would you agree with that, or what would your thought be?
I don't know. I've never done that, and I'd bow to you because I'm sure you've done it many times and found that you had you could see a cause and effect relationship.
You know, and
I think sometimes you have to be careful in how you interpret everything, but your method or my method, one of them ought to tell people that they're sensitive to something and that they better find out what they can do about it. Let me add one other point, and that is many people are told that a food allergy cannot be treated. If it can't be treated if you have an anaphylactic reaction to a food, you eat it, eggs or fish, and you end up in the hospital and almost die. That kind of allergy can't be treated. But I was taught in medical school that you couldn't treat food allergies, and that was absolutely wrong. There are physicians who do know how to treat food allergies with allergy extracts. The doctor that can do it in Phoenix is Dr. Martha Grout. And if you're, this is an international program, so if you're someplace else, you can call a number 316-684-5500. That's 316-684-5500. And they will tell you where the nearest specialist is in environmental medicine who knows how to treat ordinary allergies that cause fatigue and headache and bellyache and hyperactivity and depression. They can tell you how to treat these allergies and also asthma and hay fever, that sort of thing, with injections of food allergy extract. And many times you can even treat them with drops of different dilutions of allergy extract under the tongue.
That's fabulous. I know Dr. Grout. She's wonderful, and she's so talented, and she's so knowledgeable. So that's a great tip.
She's a treasure in our community in Phoenix. She knows so much.
Yes.
About traditional medicine as well as alternative medicine.
And isn't it nice that many of us in this field embrace both? We recognize the time and the place for each one, because occasionally we need to go that direction, but many times we don't. So I think
everyone should try to use anything that's fast, easy, safe, inexpensive, and effective first.
You know, I think we've lost a lot of common sense.
Later on, you don't want to go to an allergist that's going to charge you $1,000 or more to evaluate what needs to be done and figure out how to treat them if you can figure it out on your own. And many times there are how-to books that tell you how to approach some of these problems, and you can weed it out yourself by just taking your pulse after you eat a meal. If your pulse shoots up way over 110, 120 after you eat and you aren't running around, you ate something to which you were sensitive, and if you check those foods one at a time at a five-day interval, you may find that you can find the answer very quickly.
Right. I'm so glad you mentioned food rotation, because that's a valuable way to identify things. And it's also a wonderful way to keep food every four days,
you can actually gradually treat yourself, and it's as good or better than food allergy extract treatment, and an awful lot less expensive. And you merely start by eating a very tiny amount, and 4 days later you double that, and 4 days later you double it again, and you keep doubling it every 4 days until you're eating the amount that you want to eat. If you develop symptoms along the way, you stop doubling for maybe a week or two, and then do it more slowly. You don't double, you might increase it by 10 or 15% every 4 days, and you can eventually actually treat yourself for a food that causes fatigue or a headache or depression or arthritis or hyperactivity, things of that sort.
You know, I'm so glad to hear you say slow is real, because the medical model that so many people are dealing with is they just want the pain to go away, and that's not the answer. That's covering up what the problem is, and then the problem gets a lot bigger, and people wonder why we have so many different diseases, or the intensity or the severity of the diseases that we do have, when in fact taking some responsibility, using some common sense, slow is real, we can take care of many of these things ourselves. We used to do that, and we need to go back to that if we want to stay healthy.
I keep saying to patients, having an allergy is like having a nail in your shoe causing a sore in your foot. The treatment is not a bigger Band-Aid. The treatment is to take out the nail. If you can figure out what's making you sick and then you get rid of it, or you get allergy extract treatment for it, you do not have a problem. But if you think that all you're going to do is take an antihistamine or some asthma medicine or some sort of medicine that you use for a psychological problem, that that's going to solve it, it isn't going to solve the problem. You have to find out the cause. If you have a doctor that just treats with one drug after another, you've got the wrong doctor. Somebody has to take the time to say, why are you sick? And I train everybody to say, I'm fine, and suddenly I'm not. The first thing you do is say, what did I eat, touch, or smell that's different? And you'd be surprised how often you will find answers that all the fancy doctors have missed, because nobody took the time to think about it. Remember that nobody knows your body as well as you do, and you can figure out a lot of answers on your own very safely if you don't have extremely severe reactions to things.
You know, I agree with you. I wrote a little article one time that said, listen to the whispers so you don't have to hear the screams.
Oh, that's a nice way of putting it. I must say, Dr. Bowman has a nice sense of humor in her books, and very clever statements that you will enjoy. So that if you read her books, you're going to find that you'll find them humorous and very very knowledgeable, with common sense all over.
Well, may I put a plug in for my book? It's called You Gotta Have Guts: The Natural Way to Enhance GI Health. And what I know is as I did that, I wrote short chapters. In fact, you know, I have one called Toxic Pollution Cleansing Solution, because we've got to deal with that. But I wrote 20 chapters. They're short. They're easy to read. They're actually, again, you're going to find yourself maybe smiling while you read it, because I wanted to take a lighthearted approach about a topic that we don't necessarily want to talk about. But colon cancer, colorectal cancer, is the number three cancer that we're dealing with right now. I don't want to go there. I want to take care of my innards. And in doing so, there's no guarantee, but if you take care of your teeth, you're probably going to have them like my granddaddy did at 94. And so if we take care of our intestines, they're probably going to work extremely well for us all of our life.
There's something that a lot of people are going to ask that I want you to cover for sure before our time is up. And that is, what about colonics? I'm all in favor of them. What is your opinion? Why do you think that they're important? What concerns should somebody have about them? Because a lot of people, just the idea of having a colonic is enough to turn them off.
Right.
Give me your pearls of wisdom about this.
Well, thank you very much. You know, it bothers me that a physician will say, colonics can perforate your bowel. That for me, and I've been doing them, I'm a colon hydrotherapist as well, and I've been administering them for over 30 years, and that just doesn't happen. You do want to look for a person that is trained, and there's a lot of different kind of machines out there, just like there's different kind of automobiles, so don't be too concerned about that. I like a closed system, and a closed system means that the water that goes into the body and the water and the material that comes out of the body both go through tubes, so it's a closed system, there's no smell. Our equipment is, that part of it is disposable, so the speculum that goes into the rectum, and look at your thumb, that's about how big it is, so it fits. And the tubes that connect to it and connect to the machine are all thrown away. Now, I think that's a good use for disposable plastic because we need it to be that way. So it's safe. And I don't think a person needs to have a lot of colonics, but they need a comprehensive colonic. We need to know.
How often should they have them?
A healthy person, and that's a person who has their bowels move once or twice a day and their transit time is good and all those things we've already talked about. Maybe two a year, because it's how often do you get your teeth cleaned? Twice a year. But if you have periodontal disease, then you go back more frequently. So until the bowels are working well, if you're dealing with constipation, then maybe you need more. But I also feel you need to have the rectal suppository of probiotics. I call it reflorestation. And there's a lot of information on it on my website, which is myrealhealth.com, myrealhealth.com. I'd love to hear from our readers or our listeners, but you can read a lot there about it. So, you know, doing them occasionally is a good idea. For someone to do, you know, say 15 colonics in 30 days, I would disagree with that. There needs to be a reason why. And you need a qualified person. People are well trained, but go ahead and interview them. Ask questions of the person. It's okay to take a professional and go, well, how long have you done this? And what do you think? And get some opinions and then compare that so that you feel comfortable with a fairly intimate procedure. It's very personal and you want to feel safe. It is safe. It offers a lot of health benefits. And we can increase our vitality. We can increase our health by keeping our intestines better. And it doesn't have to be an ucky thing. It's important to feel good about, again, our entire body. It's there for a reason, and we need to take care of it.
I think that everybody should realize that if you keep your colon in good shape and you get a colonic a couple of times a year, you will be much less apt to develop colon cancer and rectal cancer. And that's important. I think we've got to say what's causing this third most terrible disease that's killing people. Here's one thing that concrete you can do, and the chances are you will not get colon and rectal cancer if you do this a couple of times a year. And some people think it's going to smell. It doesn't smell at all, as she said. There's no odor. There's no drippage. You don't squirt all over the place or anything like that if it's done properly. Just make sure that you're going to somebody that knows what they're doing.
You know, I say to people, you'll leave here saying, that wasn't nearly as bad as I thought, because we conjure up fears in our head that don't come true. And so you're right. It doesn't smell. It's gentle. If it becomes
It doesn't
too,
hurt. It doesn't smell. It doesn't even take too long.
No, it doesn't. And if you're with a practitioner and they're saying, oh, hold a little more water, and you can't, just say no. Let it out. Because we have inflow and we have outflow. And be proactive, but be in charge as well. It's okay to say, that's enough now. You know, it's okay to be empowered in our procedure.
And don't you sometimes see things come through because you can see what's coming out through the colorless tubing? Can't you spot if there's blood or something abnormal coming through and you can warn them about it? Incidentally, do you ever see parasites coming out?
Yes, I do see parasites, and we do have a site tube. You're right about all that. A lot of times parasites are microscopic, so we can see things like tapeworms and hookworms and pinworms, but the little guys like Giardia, you know, amoebas, that's going to have to be identified by a lab. You're not going to see those, but we see mucus. I saw one individual had purple poo. He had eaten beets and blueberries, and his,
wow,
his poo came out like Barney the dinosaur purple. So it's fun that I can identify things and I can let people know that their body is telling me things and they should be looking so that they can know before they even get to me.
Now, we've only got a couple of minutes left, so is there any last words that you want to say that might help people all over the world that are listening to this program?
I think the thing that I would like to say is you've been blessed with a body, and it is a responsibility to take care of it. The rewards are so worth it. And there's an interconnectedness with our body. We're not just a heart to a cardiologist or a brain to a neurologist. We're a unit. We're a live, vital unit, and all parts play a role. And so to understand that, to honor your body, to take the time to take care of your body is more than worth it. And the sooner that you catch on to this idea, the better you're going to feel. I want to play the rest of my life. I want to be vital and healthy, and I've learned how to do that, and I share that in my writing. I share that on my website. I share that in my work. And so if your ducks aren't in a row, get moving. There's a lot you can do. You've learned a lot. There's more to learn, but get moving.
And once again, the name of Dr. Bowman's book is You Gotta Have Guts. She gave you her website. My website's drrapp.com, and there's lots of tips and things that can help, that you can do to help keep yourself feeling better. Look under drrapp.com for different things that will save you money and give you answers. I thank all of you for listening, and be sure to listen again next week when we talk about some other things that would help you keep your body in the best possible shape. It's your most precious possession is your body and your brain. You better take care of it. It only lasts a certain period of time, and you want the last few years of your life to have everything working as well as it did 10 and 20 years ago.
Dr. Rapp, thank you. It's been a pleasure being your guest.
Oh, thank you. And bye for now, and watch your bowel movements.
Thanks.
Thank you again for joining us on Our Unsuspected Allergies Ruining Your Life with host Doris Rapp, MD. Please tune in again next Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. We'll see you then.